you just automatically wound on a hit roll.
I don't mind that.
Seems good.
Listen up, Umi. This is a podcast with the most Tucker. This is Forge the Narrative.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host, Bale of LS Hall's podcast. I'm joined by Adam Camilleri.
Evening, everybody.
Red Powell.
Hello.
And Tanya's back. Tanya Gates.
Hi, everybody.
Yay.
Thanks for listening. Please do not forget to like, share, subscribe, leave us some 5-star reviews. Those are ways that everyone can benefit from. You click those little things and it like lets the algorithms know that people are listening. And so other people listen and it's great. Keeps the circle going. Really appreciate it when y'all do that in the comments too. Actually, we upload the shows to YouTube as well. And I've been horribly derelict in that through travel. And well, I don't want to make any excuses, but they're coming back. They're back. You can find them there. So comments there. Always appreciated. A lot has happened in the last week. Octarius has gone up for pre-order.
Yeah, it's a bit of a spicy morsel. So, and that's not what I expected. So, were you guys a little bit confused? So, GW were doing some previews and stuff. I was really confused by what factions were going to be in Octarius when it came out, at least this part one. I assumed, I mean, it's Octarius, and knowing some of the fluff background, I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, Orcs, Nids, and then probably, probably Guard or Inquisition or whatever. They'll somehow get some Imperium in there. Don't be scared, guy. Imperium players, you're fine.
Gotta get something. So
you always get something. But yeah, no Orcs in there. We've got Acadian supplement, Deathwatch Army of Renown, and a Leviathan supplement. So two supplements, one Army of Renown. And I gotta say, it's all pretty good. It's all pretty good stuff.
Yeah, we were fortunate enough to Games Workshop provided a review copy of this, so we are able to talk about this a little bit earlier. I don't think it's in everyone's hands yet. But to your point, it is labeled Book One, Rising Tide. So
yep.
You know, could just be the tip of the spear here.
Yeah, well, part two will be really interesting what they do. They also put in some updated
fortifications rules. And Inquisitors.
Yeah. Did the Inquisitors get, I actually haven't seen the Inquisitor stuff. Did they get updated as well? Or is that just a reprint from Pariah?
I think Karamazov, his multi-melta is now like updated. So yeah. I don't know if there was any major changes to the others though, to be fair. Mm.
Nothing. His multi-melta is a master-crafted multi-melta, 30-inch range, heavy 2, strength 8, neck 4, AP D6, and then it's D6 plus 2 if you're within average.
So you know all the arguments I make with my models that they will all be helmeted because they're not, you know, dumb and would
not minus one toughness.
Yeah. Karamazov is eschews all the Adam logic, and he's like, well, I can have an armored walker that doesn't protect me in any way, and on top of that, I won't wear a helmet. Like, he's
but
just
it's
like,
not a baby carrier. He's legit sitting on a chair.
But the chair's on a dreadnought. Like, so
walking on dreadnought legs, yeah.
I had the option to have a dreadnought around me, and I chose to not do that and also not wear a helm. He's just like, ha ha!
He is putting a lot of faith in that 4+ invulnerable save.
Well, yeah, faith in the Emperor. He's untouchable. Just
yeah.
One spiky rock away. I love it.
It collates them all into one place. And then, yeah, those legacy fortifications are back. Aegis Defense Line, Fortress of Redemption, Void Shield Generator, Bastion.
Man, and some of these aren't bad. I mean, so there have been like little meme points of the 40K history where every now and then a fortification will rock up and kind of just define the game for a little bit. We've seen it with Void Shield Generators all the way through 6th and 7th edition. Kind of, they were just everywhere because they used to just give you essentially armor plating on your stuff. They used to give you you had to shoot through an AV-12 barrier in order to interact, and now they've become a 5-up feel no pain bubble. And then there was the Aegis Defense Line because you could go to ground behind it for like, you know, and if you had stuff.
Yeah, I love the fact that you could customize that to whatever the battlefield terrain was, and you really could fit 9 Chimeras behind it. And yeah. I'm not saying I knew anyone who did that, but let me say it worked out pretty well.
But the last time I can remember one of these dominating, I think it was the end of 7th, and it was a Sky Shield landing pad that used to give everybody an invulnerable save on top of it.
You could
and
maybe put a Wraith Knight and a Lynx on top of it. Again, I don't know anyone who did any of this.
No, we'd never know any of those people. Riff the riffraff, you know, wouldn't associate with them. But yeah, there have been times where these things have popped up as things you may see here, there, and everywhere. And so, really cool. I like some of the rules. I don't think these are bad options either. They might not be amazing because I think fortifications are a little bit awkward to get in your list at points, but I'm just happy they got new rules. I'd love to see them again. They have such nostalgia to them for me.
Let's talk about a little awkwardness to get in your list. You want to take a guess how many points the Fortress of Redemption is?
290.
10, you want to wing one out there?
I honestly have no idea. I've never even played.
If it's over 400, I'm going to be upset.
440 points.
I was going to guess like 300-ish.
Plus 15 points for heavy bolters.
How much is a Bastion?
Bastion is 180 points and then plus stuff for the guns.
That ain't bad.
So, and what is a Bastion? It used to be like, there was a, it used to be quite tough. Yeah, what, toughness 8, 18 wounds, 3 plus save. Yeah, look, it's a land raider with like one worth save to kill.
Yeah, with good fire points also. I mean, that I don't want that to be understated. Is it, you can shoot out of this thing.
That's a big deal.
How many lads get 15 infantry models? Each model with a wounds characteristic of 3 or more takes up the space of 2 models. So you could have 15 Primaris, but you know only 7 Gravis, et cetera, or Terminators. I like it. I like it.
Yeah, and you're shooting figs up to 10 models embarked when this transport can be selected to shoot. I mean, I like that it's 10 models. You could put some stout stuff in here.
Well, or the opposite. You put some quite weak stuff in there. For 180 points, you wrap a Land Raider around it, and they still get to shoot.
I could work out pretty well with the Guard. Things like that.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking, my man. I was like, oh, well, I could just chuck a bunch of heavy weapons teams or special weapons in here. That could actually feel pretty good.
Well, I always think of Marine units that, well, because they have such great stats, but sometimes very difficult to position and get off their trick. Aggressors come to mind with that a bit. I don't know whether you put aggressors in a Bastion, but I do know aggressors cannot go in a Land Raider.
That's very true. Does it say anything about non-Primaris or non...
It doesn't say...
That's exactly right. You just put anything in there. That's actually quite exciting. And what is it? Yeah, 180 points. And then you comms antenna for an upgrade, which gives you, in your command phase, one or more character units are embarked within this building. Roll 1d6 on a 5+, you get a command point. How many points is that? 5 points. 5 points to the option to get a command point.
Yeah, 5 points to get a basically unique ability that very few armies get.
Five turns of the game, you're going to get 5 points to get a command point. Like, that's not bad.
What I like to compare that to is like your command point exhaustion that you normally have to deal with. I know you regenerate some over the course of the game, but later in the game, if you're a thirsty army for CP, that's when you're going to want them the most.
It's true.
So everyone you bank early for free for 5 points, 1 point a turn. You're paying 1 point a turn for the benefit of rolling to see if you get a CP.
Yeah, I actually don't mind that. Actually, I'm thinking about things in my head right now. Like, I play, you know, everyone knows I play Dark Angels, and one of the things that you have to do with Dark Angels if you want to play stuff like, you know, to get good amounts of Plasma Dakar is to usually have to take Azrael because it gives you the reroll so you don't auto die. It also gives you the 4+ invulnerable save. Azrael is only 10, is I think is 10 points less expensive than this Bastion, and I could put 15 Hellblasts.
Hellblasters is another. That's better than the aggressor choice.
Yeah, I can put 15 Hellblasters inside this thing and wrap a Land Raider around them. Only issue is they're not going to get any rerolls in there because they're technically off the table. They're embarked into transport. So, but then what I do is then I just spend the 2 CP to Weapons of the Dark Age them instead of overcharging, and then they just get all the benefits and none of the downsides.
The quad gun here is a 48-inch range, heavy 8 weapon, strength 7. Only neg 1 AP, only 1 damage. I think that's a bit of a dagger. But each time an attack is made with this weapon against an aircraft, add 1 to that attack's hit roll. So it's normally BS4, and on BS3, could have an 8-shot gun for 20 points. I don't know. I don't know that I would do that. I think I would just stack good troops inside and have them shoot out or go with the bolters.
I wouldn't. So the thing is, if you put a character in there, it's not doing whatever the character's supposed to do. Like, it's not giving out orders. It's not giving out rerolls or whatever. So if you've got a character that really just doesn't add to the game or just does something else by existing on the table, maybe like a Nexos, actually. You know, like a Nexos or a Tallyman who just, if they're... Wait, would they get to use that ability if they're not on the table, though?
No, I think that's, you have to be on the table. Same for embarked in vehicles. You would not.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
So I think that, never mind. So you have to give up whatever a character was going to bring to your army in order to get an opportunistic 5+ to get a CP. But 5 points might just be the go for you. But yeah, this is cool. I like these rules.
It comes with 4 heavy bolters too, but I don't know if we mentioned that. But the 4 heavy bolters are built into that price.
Yeah, that's, well, it's not the worst thing ever. It's on BS4 Plus, but has to shoot the closest target, I think.
Yes.
Mm. Cool.
Wait a second. So in your shooting phase, each time this model is selected to shoot, if no friendly units are embarked, then the heavy bolters can only target the closest. Yeah. So if it's equipped with the, so if you're, it's only if no anybody's inside or not inside. Mm.
So as soon as you govern it, you get all the choices back. It's nice. It's nice. I like it.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll see if I've got one dusty hanging around from sixth edition.
Yeah.
Last time it was a Bastion.
I mean, it's not necessarily exciting to talk about inanimate objects, you know, that exist on the table, but these shoot, and I like things, you know, that go pew pew.
Well, we've got 2 guard players here, don't we? Actually, we've got 3 guard players here.
I think we all play guard.
I think we all play guard. Yeah. Actually, I was about to say, no, we have 4 players. But Cadia supplement, tell me about it.
I think that it's really good if you've been playing Cadia. That's what I think.
You don't think it's enough to tempt folks to that faction if they're not already deep into it? Let's go over what it does.
I think it depends, like, how you're playing guard, right? Like, if you're going heavy into infantry or you really like playing that way, that might be something to look into. I'm not sure that what it gives is going to help the shooting efficiency of vehicles enough to make me switch regiments.
Because you're taking the Vostroyness, the +6-inch range, and the what's the other one? The reroll amount of shots.
Yeah, so it's like the Catachin. Yeah.
So the half Vostroyan, half Catachin specialist, spotted details, whatever it is. It's generally been like the competitive choice for guard for a while. I think this is good enough to tempt some builds away from it. Mm-hmm. What's different about these guys is I think this builds into the more artillery and infantry, less the tanks and the tank commanders. But there's some pretty exciting stuff here. Well, so the first and foremost, I like to point out, those who remember the Army of Renown or the formation they had in 8th edition where they had the 3-damage battle cannon, get that back. In addition to that, there's a little cherry on top of it being +1 to wound against chaos units. So if Vengeance of Cadia wasn't enough, if Banner of Lost Cadia wasn't enough, Super Relic that also gets a cherry on top against chaos, just because hate them in specifics.
Yeah, so you're talking about Gatekeeper. This is a model with a battle cannon only. The Relic replaces a battle cannon that has a following profile: 72-inch range, heavy D6, strength 8, neg 2 AP, damage 3. Important to point out that Relics don't typically go on vehicles unless they say they can.
Now, there's some interesting stuff here. So I don't know how much you guys use Voxcasters. I've been known to use a Voxcaster here and there, but I don't like taking, you know, 5-10 of them because
I like
all of a sudden
they look on the model and in the unit, but I don't typically take them.
Exactly, because it's a 5-point upgrade on a 50-point unit, and after you've taken a couple of those, you can just be like, well, I can just buy another unit.
I mean, a melta gun, yeah.
But so there's a Servo Skull here, and so it's for infantry officer only. You extend the range of your orders to 12 inches, which usually is 6, so it's always 12 inches instead of 6, which is already good. And then if that character is within 3 of a friendly unit with a Voxcaster, you can extend the range of orders to 72 inches if the other unit has the Voxcaster. So anywhere on the table, you can issue orders to. Now, where this is cool is outflanking veteran squads, which usually you have to bring like an overinvestment of officers with them if you're going to outflank 2 or 3 of them. Now, you can just spend to strategic reserve a Voxcaster unit of whatever and just walk it on anywhere on the table and not be shackled to, you know, the dagger that lets you outflank or any of those things. Just walk it on anywhere.
Proximity to this, your castle or whatever.
Exactly. And you just bada bing, bada boom. I spent 2 CP at the start of the game and now 3 or 4 of veteran squads just going to walk on with all these flamers and, you know, melter guns and plasma guns. And I'm just going to sit here next to this guy, next to the artillery in the back of my lines and just yell at you very sternly, shoot more better. And they're going to do it. It feels good.
Got to radio in that support.
I like it. You wouldn't dunk 30 points of worth of Voxcasters in your list just for this, but I could see taking 2 or 3.
I like how you've kind of stitched that together. It just, I don't know. It just feels when you're, I think when you mentioned it earlier, when you're investing extra points into a unit that cannot take any pressure.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Feels rough.
I'm working pretty heavily on my guard right now, my Tanith specifically. And, unfortunately, just none of it really scratches the itch of what I'm looking at. I think there's some awesome stuff. What I've really looked at with that, and to the extent that I was hunting down Blackstone Fortress stuff, I have gathered to myself quite a number of Blackstone Fortress Traitor Guard. And I think that this, taking the Cadian rules for the White Shields and being able to flesh out those larger squads, I think makes for a lot of, I could see a swarm, an entire table full of Traitor Guard models using White Shield rules. I know that's extremely super blasphemous, but I'll take it. I
think gotta get that narrative itch scratch. So let me read what White Shields do. So use the stratagem before the battle when you are mustering your army. If your warlord has the Cadian keyword, you know, or, you know, whatever Red's doing, select one Cadian detachment from your army. All Cadian conscript units in that detachment gain the White Shields keyword, have a leadership characteristic of 6. Lose the raw recruits ability. If that detachment contains 2 or fewer conscript units, the stratagem costs 1 CP. If it contains 3 to 4 conscript units, it costs 2 CP. If it contains 5 or more conscript units, it costs 3 CP. If you are using the specialist reinforcements requisition to upgrade your unit in your crusade force with the stratagem, it will only upgrade a single unit of Cadian conscripts from your army each time it is used.
I am quite a big fan here. And yeah, this, as soon as you said that, Red, my eyes bugged out a little bit, because you're absolutely right. This makes the, like I said, you know, the artillery and the kind of the conscripts work. So that's kind of the rabble, you know, Lost in the Damned-esque feel that Traitor Guard kind of have to them, where they're just being herded into the meat grinder. There's also another one here. There's another stratagem here. It's called Sanctioned Psyker, where you upgrade a Primaris Psyker to become an officer. That feels like it works really well for the Traitor Guard thing. Like, you'd have like a, you know, a demagogue.
Get your malefic lords back.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Your demagogue, you know, driving the rabble into the trenches or whatever.
I mean, throw an Inquisitor in there, cool. Play it as a Chaos Lord kind of deal.
Yes. Man, I'm with you there, but dude, I'm riding that foxhole with you. I think it sounds awesome.
And there are many power armored Inquisitors.
There sure are.
There are a couple of really good stratagems here, though. So there's two here I want to talk about in particular. I don't think any of their stratagems that they got are particularly bad, but these two are really good. The first one is Load, Fire, Reload. It's a 1 CP strat. Use a stratagem in your shooting phase when a Cadian vehicle unit from your army is selected to shoot. Select one enemy unit till the end of the phase. Each time a model in that unit makes an attack with a weapon that has a blast ability against the enemy target, you have exploding sixes. Or double exploding sixes if you're targeting a monster or a vehicle. And if a hit is scored, that unit can't overwatch or set to defend. Now, where this is really cool, of course, Tanya probably can speak to this as well, but as there's things called manticores that we seem to have, and they seem to be pretty good.
Popular choice right now.
This was one of the stratagems that I thought was really tasty, but so you're saying use it on a manticore, but like, are the exploding sixes really that reliable if you can't reroll one of the dice for the number of shots, though?
That is fair. That is very fair. I mean, the first thing I came to was like, if I'm shooting and I need this guy to, you know, go into something like a Plague Burst Crawler or say a Primarch. And, you know, well, firstly, I named two chaos things, so we're already venturing.
Well, every wound counts against those things. I mean, just...
exactly right. And you're re-rolling and all those things. But you're absolutely right. But let's say you're against a Skitarii horde and you've got a brick of 20 Skitarii, you just get 12 shots. You can easily, there are a couple of other stratagems for +1 to hit available. You could hit them on threes, possibly re-rolling once if you're standing still because you're Cadian. And then, you know, if you've got 12 shots, threes rerolling ones, you could end up at around 9 hits, 10 hits. And then, you know, 2 or 3 of those could be extras. So you could end up with 12 hits out of 12 shots. And that felt very exciting to me. But you're right. It isn't, without the reliability on the number of shots, it isn't always great. Like, I had to use an example where you automatically had 12 shots to make that sound good, didn't I?
No, this is, I mean, it is very good. It's one, well, let's not understate, it's 1 CP.
Yeah, it's 1 CP.
You don't have to do it all the time. So it's only when you need to do it or want to do it, you have it, and you didn't have it before. And this gives extra hits, which is exactly what the guard need to compensate for the fact that they have currently random number of shots and then
on everything. It also works on all your tank commanders. So that demolisher cannon that a lot of people take, or that battle cannon we just mentioned, the 3 damage one, this also adds extra value there. And that, of course, that tank commander can automatically be rerolled, giving themselves rerolls. Here's the one that I think is quite cheeky and might be getting a little bit overlooked. It's never give up, never surrender. It's 2 CP. Use this stratagem at the end of your movement phase. I'll say that again, at the end of your movement phase. So you've already advanced. You've already seen where you've ended up. And you've already lined up where you're going to do your orders, most likely. That unit, if it has the objective secured ability, each model unit has and counts as another model for objective secured. So, e.g., every guardsman counts as two. Or every vehicle in the unit counts as five models. And then you add one to any combat attrition test taken for that unit. But where that's really exciting, and this is what I love, for 2 CP, yeah, you just get a Chimera, which every guard player has, with 10 obset guys in it. And let's say you have 2 heavy flamers, 2 heavy bolters on that, which is enough to roll up against, you know, an intercessor, let's say, and kill one of them. You know, you're not going to kill 2 or 3 because you're just not that good. But you can kill one of them, yeah. And then your Chimera counts as 5 guys. And so you've taken that objective off them. And then those 4 intercessors, unless they've got a power fist and they're blood angels, ain't going to kill that Chimera back. And even if they do, 10 more dudes get out and just compound the problem.
With better weaponry, probably, than...
yeah, but it feels pretty good to me. I actually, when I thought about that, I'm like, wow, all of a sudden the mechanized infantry actually feel kind of awesome.
Well, what I dig about this is 2 CP to score a primary.
Exactly right. It's after you move as well, which I love. Yeah, after you see where you've ended up.
You can swing a turn. I mean, that's really what you're trying to do in these games.
Yeah, but it's after you score your primary. It's after you already score for yourself. You're lining up to more disrupt them than score your own.
Right. You're a point swing is what I'm mentioning here. You're basically flipped a turn that would have gone against you to now for you, and you're ahead in the game after you've seen it all line up.
I feel like if you're playing guard, if you're not trying to deny as many points as possible, mm-hmm. You're not sort of playing to guard's strengths, really. So I actually really do like this stratagem, and I feel like if I had access to it, I would be using it on turn 3 and turn 4 and turn 5.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was my thoughts as well. The other really cheeky application is it says vehicle models in the unit count as 5 models. So does that mean if I have a unit of 3 sentinels, they count as 15 models on an objective?
Sure does.
Sure, that's pretty saucy, especially when you got scout moves and things of that nature. I think that could be might not be enough to get the 6 or 9 sentinels off the shelf. But you know, if you had 3 in your list, I would be like, kudos to you, sir. You're a gentleman of taste and culture.
What would you equip a
sentinel with? Apologies.
I mean, what weapon do you think is best positioned on a sentinel?
So
I play with 2 scout sentinels. And I equip them with heavy flamers.
I was about to say, if you're going to go scout sentinels, I think heavy flamers for the win.
Yeah.
If you go on armored sentinels, I actually think there's probably not many bad options. It depends on what you're hunting. Against Drakari, I actually quite like, you can take autocannons. Why do I think you can't take autocannons?
You can. I don't know if you can take them on every sentinel, but you can.
Yeah, for some reason I think you can't. I don't mind plasma cannons. I don't mind las cannons, especially if you're on armored sentinels, because they've got a stratagem for +2 to hit the first round of combat. And then on those ones as well, you take hunter-killer missiles. So
first time you pop off.
Yeah, if you're going to go it, I think you go it. Your first time you pop off, you can really lay down some anti-infantry, anti-mechanized firepower and take a real pound of flesh. But the thing is there, what you love about that is as soon as you fire off all those things and spend all the stratagems, people are like, well, they're never going to be that good again. And so they kind of just ignore them.
Yeah, well, I think people are going to ignore them anyway. So every time that you do anything with the Sentinel, or if you could do this, I mean, I don't know that you go 3 in a squad, but you'd probably do 3 singles.
I like to take 2 singles, and I feel like if people shoot them round 1, that's a win for me because they have to shoot a sentinel. And
yeah, that's 5 more wounds on your tank commander that didn't get taken.
Yeah, and then if they don't shoot it, well, that thing is scoring me points every turn. That is still alive.
Yes,
right. It's getting me engaged, and in some cases, it's denying me banners immediately. Right? Because sentinels, they have the pregame move, then they move, and then they have that strat that you can play that instead of shooting, they just move 2d6 extra. So you can just like bomb them up onto an objective and be like, well, you have to remove this sentinel if you want to put up your banner. Feels so good.
Oh, that's pretty solid.
That's cute. Yeah, I actually quite like that. It's clever.
Yeah.
Army of Renown, yeah? They seem to be the...
Oh, you want to switch over to the... you want to look at the Death Watch next? Or?
Yeah, well, whatever you guys want. But I wanted to talk about Armies of Renown for a second. Because, like, so APOC was the first thing that got formations, yeah? And then we had formations that turned into Decurions. like the Decurion style detachments we had in 7th edition. And then we had the 8th edition. What are the 8th edition ones called?
Oh, that's a good question.
Special detachments.
Yeah, we had specialist detachments in 8th edition, and now we've got Armies of Renown. It's kind of the next iteration. And I just want to ask you guys what you think about them. How you feel about them? Do you think they're a good? This format is the winner? Has G-Dub solved it?
Well, they don't give you a ton of free stuff, and that's what I think where we've kind of gone off the rails in the past is that people want to filter towards getting free stuff, and getting free stuff in this edition points wise is way harder to come by. And true, when it does happen, I feel like it's done a lot more judiciously. And I mean, dare I say, somewhat balanced.
Yeah, that's fair. What Paul's referring to is just how absolutely bonkers 7th edition got with giving out free stuff. There was the Battle Company for Space Marines just gave you free transports. So you just bought all your Marines, and then they all got to have a drop pod, Rhino, or Razorback for free. It was kind of ridiculous. And then you had, what was the Admech one where you had to take one of every unit?
War Convocation.
And they just got every upgrade for free. All your upgrades were free. So you just bought all the base models of everything, all the chassis. And then every gun, every upgrade, everything, they just had all of it for free. So they had every unit had every upgrade. It was completely
nuts. What a
time
to be alive.
I know. What a time to be a fat cat with a big collection.
sticking on the Armies of Renown is that there seem to be some trade-offs. And as long as they stay consistent with the trade-offs being meaningful, I'm all for it.
And it's interesting that they... What you're giving up is really significant. Well, usually. And if it's not really significant, then what you gain isn't that significant. And so I think that they've made it really well measured. This Death Watch one, I think, might be the perfect Army of Renown prototype. And that's why I wanted to bring it up. Because because you're giving up so much, but you're getting so much. So just to break this one down quickly, you're giving up the ability to take anything other than kill teams and transports and characters. That's it. That's all you have to take in your army. So that's no dreadnoughts, no tanks, no elite, no bike units or Terminator units, specialized, you have to take each of the kill teams as the only things you can take. And those kill teams have to come with their associated upgrade. So they have to be upgraded to Domitar or whatever. And for those who don't know, those upgrades are like what, everyone's got their armies pay extra on the unit to make it better. I suppose this would be comparable to Witches to Blood Brides, Cabalt Warriors to Trueborn.
10, 15 points extra to gain something.
Yeah. Well, these ones are a bit more expensive. I think the cheapest is 15, and the most of them are between 10, 20, and 30. So when you talk about starting to take only these kill teams, and every kill team has to come with an associated 20-ish point premium added on top, it really starts to feel like you're giving up a lot, but you're getting just adding tools to a toolbox, Like, okay, so I'm not allowed to have any power tools, but I get to have every socket wrench, every single spanner, you understand me? Like, I feel like that's accurate.
Yeah. And let me clarify a little bit. So the restrictions are, well, one, you have to be Death Watch, and then your army can only include the following units: kill teams that have been upgraded to have a specialism. That's what you're talking about. Characters, yep. Corvus Black Stars, and then transport, one transport for the unit. Units.
Yeah, and so it creates a pretty pigeonholed army list, but the options for how you play it on the table explode exponentially. Like, do you want to read out what the I love how they've got Veterans of the Long Vigil, like Veterans of the Long War, Veterans of the Long Vigil. It's just such a little cheeky play on words. But that, you want to tell us about that bonus, Paul? Because it's absolutely
So at the start of each battle round, you can select one chapter tactic or successor tactic from Codex Space Marines. If you do, then until the start of the next battle round, that unit has a chapter tactic or successor tactic instead of the Xenos Hunters. You cannot select the same chapter tactic or successor tactic more than once per battle. Right. Each time you use the Brotherhood or Veteran stratagem, while Strike Force kill team and Strike Force character units in your army are using a different chapter tactic to Xenos Hunters, the chapter tactic or successor tactic selected for the stratagem replaces whatever chapter tactic or stretch tactic. It's a lot. I know I said the same words over and over again, but that's how the rules are written. You get what I'm saying. It replaces this when you're doing the other thing.
It's this rule is incredible for the generals out there. Because the playbook just absolutely tripled. Every turn you get to decide which chapter of Space Marines you want to be. Oh, are you closing on me? I'm going to be Blood Angels. So if you do want to charge me, or if I want to charge you, I got +1/+1 to charge and +1 to wound. Oh, do I need to fall back and do stuff? I can be Ultramarines to fall back and just shoot. Do I just need to survive a turn Iron Hands?
You're feeling a pain right now.
Yeah, exactly right. You got a bunch of mortals, Black Templars for a 5+ against mortals, and plus, you know, the rerolls to advances and charges. It's so good to the savvy general, but the really pigeonholed army list. And I feel like this is the best example of, hey, I'm giving up a lot, but my God, I'm getting a lot in the exchange. And if I'm willing to play this playstyle and dedicate myself to it, it's going to be rewarding.
Well, with Death Watch, and I mean, they do. They've got tricks you can do, and now even more tricks. And do you think this is going to make us see more of them?
I've been sitting here. I mean, when we did a little bit of the review on the show, Paul, I mean, you said it yourself, like right now, this book isn't at its like zenith. Yeah. Because right now it's contending with Custodes, Death Guard, Dark Angels. Like it hasn't got any, like the only Xenos that it had to really go after was Necrons at the time. But now Drakari's out in force, Orcs are starting to make a big splash, Nid's just got new rules, and probably, you know, shortly on a horizon, Eldar is still to come out. Like, we still might not have seen the zenith of these guys, and this is another cool alternative build out there for the Death Watch I was still about to say tryhards, diehards.
Freudian slip there, huh?
Yeah.
Hey, look, if you are playing Death Watch, you are trying hard. You got to know a lot.
Yeah, if you've been playing them since they came out, you are truly a veteran of the Long Vigil. But what I thought of when I saw this, because I played a little bit of Death Watch in 8th edition, this feels a lot 8th edition-esque for how they used to play. Because back then, they used to take 3 or 4 super specialized kill teams. Like, there wasn't any primary kill teams back then, but you'd have super ultra specialized ones, you know, a couple of storm shields, some storm bolters, a couple of terminators, maybe some cyclones, missile launchers, and some power fists and chain fists and Vanguard veteran and a biker in there. And it was a really exciting way of playing the game because you had a unit that felt like it could do anything. It could be anywhere. It could be whatever you wanted it to be. I feel like they're getting a little bit of that back in the fact that I need to close the gap on you. Bang, white scars. In we go. Advance and charge. It just feels really... It feels good. It just feels good, you know? Like, and to reward people for having a small, dedicated love of a faction, I think this is a perfect army of renown.
I'm digging this Specialism Extremis. Specialism Extremis stratagem for 3CP. Use the stratagem until the end of the phase. Each time a model in that unit makes an attack, a successful hit roll automatically wounds the target if, and then it goes down a series of conditions.
The condition is, so you have to specialize your kill team, right? So you specialize your kill team to target, you know, a different detachment option. So a fast attack, heavy support, elites,
battlefield
troops, HGs. Yeah, battlefield role. That's better. And if you're targeting your associated battlefield role, you just automatically wound on a hit roll.
I don't mind that.
Seems good. Just putting it out there.
I mean, especially as you see armies, you know, they're becoming some templates, you know, in the field. And if you expect to see lots of that stuff, you know, then why not? Especially if it's something like a flyer, which may be harder to hit. That way, when you do hit it, you instantly convert.
Spot on.
Having to make saves.
Oh, man, I know that unit's totally going to put transhuman on. Okay, I'm just going to wound you if I hit.
Amazing point. Amazing point. Yeah.
Yes.
You're paying a lot for the privilege, though. Yeah, 3CP, not an easy investment to make. But
that's
if you're
a ton
just
for
like,
Space Marine armies. That is a truckload. And you cannot use this stratagem on the same strike force more than once per battle.
But that one turn, you're just going to be like, well, see this part of your army? I want to unsee it. 3CP, let's go.
Well, it's just stuff like this. And that Venator is its fast attack and flyers, so it's not even just flyers. But, I guess now all my bolters hit you wounded.
Well, another thing I didn't mention, the fact that the choosing the chapter tactic is also powerful because you also get, as a Death Watch player at the start of the battle round, you also get to choose your doctrine. You can be, you know, Devastator Doctrine for one turn of the game, your choice. Two options for Tactical Doctrine, your choice of the turn you pick it. And three for Assault Doctrine. So you can double up on this. So let's say you've got the best example I can think of for this strat is just who's going to put out the most shots. I think it's the Gravis kill team. I think it's called the Indomitor kill team, where you take 5 aggressors and 5 heavy intercessors. And of course you take the assault guns on the heavy intercessors so you can, you know, advance and shoot all the guns. And of course the aggressors have the Bolt Storm gauntlets. And I think
are better. They need to be seeing more play than I think they are currently seeing.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like I think Marine troops are struggling a little bit, just not kind of lifting their weight as much. And I do think that heavy intercessors might be a way for people to bring, like, actually have a troop's choice for Marines that actually just slaps from range again. But, like, you can just put 100 wounds on something with this.
How does this work with, like, flamers? Since you don't roll to hit, does it still...
Well, it says each time model in that unit makes an attack, a successful hit roll. And so because you don't make a hit roll.
Yeah.
Yeah. How cool would that be, though? You drop pod. Get out the combi flamer stem guide, boys. We all know we've got them. Dust them off. Put them in the pod. Yeah. It would be pretty sick, but I don't think it works that way, unfortunately.
Put that on the fact watch.
Backwatch. Do it. Starting to be a little bit of a trend. We went straight from the Black Templars Codex that had a way of making a super sergeant. And then this Army of Renown gave you a way to make a super sergeant as well. It's 1 CP honored veteran of the watch. And then you take anyone with the sergeant keyword. They get +1 wound and you get to give them a warlord trait. And this is really cool. Like I love this. I love having this in the game. I feel like I want more factions to have this. But yeah, this is just a really cool way of just spicing up a squad.
Which one is that?
Honored veteran of the watch.
Oh, gotcha. I was looking at the black bolts.
Yeah, that one's cute, but I can't figure out how to get the most out of it. It's another thing we're seeing. Sorry, I feel like I'm talking way too much, guys. I'm going to shut up in a minute.
Well, you're Death Watch enthusiast.
So it seems like there's a couple of things. I should make a little list because there's a couple of last edition, in 8th edition, everyone's stratagems, so everyone lived and died by their ability to double activate, that double move, double shoot, double fight. And then the cherry on tops were like the pluses to wound and pluses to hit strats and stuff of that nature. All of those have gone in 9th edition to most intents and purposes, with the exception of being some niche choices like, flayed ones fighting twice, intercessor shooting twice, etc. But the stuff we're starting to see is that every single faction gets some way to just burst a couple of mortal wounds. Just like, okay, I need some cherry mortal wounds. Bang, here, I'm going to lay down some on you.
It's an aggressive addition.
Yeah, it is. Well, we had it in last edition as well, like the Hellfire Shells, where 1 CP, if you hit with a heavy bolter, you do D3 mortal wounds. And it feels like it's evolved from D3 to either 3 or 6.
Yeah.
So they're just like...
The type characteristic of all bolt weapon models in the unit are equipped with a change to heavy 1. Each time a model in that unit makes a ranged attack with a bolt weapon, see the Codex Space Marines for whatever... on an unmodified wound roll of a 6, that attack inflicts 1 mortal wound on the target in addition to the normal damage with a maximum 6.
So it's the first point that that makes me think it's going to be really hard to get this to pop off, like to get to full 6. I don't really know how you do it because all your guns become heavy 1. Like you have a aggressor that usually has 6 plus D6 shots for his frag storms and his gun. But now he gets 2 shots because each gun only makes 1 shot now.
Yeah.
So that guy has 2 shots instead of up to 12. So how do you get enough dice in your hand to reliably throw 6 sixes on the wound roll? I'm scratching my head on it.
Well, I think maybe another way of coming at it is, when do you use this stratagem?
We use this stratagem when you've got Mortarion on 2 wounds next to your army.
Yeah.
And he's like, well,
Yeah. You say, okay, that's exactly right. Or you're lined up against something, a knight.
Well, so one of the options I thought, so you have there's the Phobos kill team, the Spectrus kill team, and you can take 5 eliminators in that kill team. Like you have 5 eliminators. Now they already have a bolt weapon, as in the heavy bolt sniper rifle, which is already heavy 1. So you're not losing anything there. And they already do mortal wounds on 6s to wound because they're a sniper rifle. For 1 CP, your 6s are 2 mortals. That feels pretty good.
Yeah, that's not bad for 1 CP.
It's not bad, if you want to really kill that succubus. Like you're like...
Well, and you're doing your normal damage.
Exactly, and it's all in addition as well. So I like that option. That option feels pretty good.
Oh, I like
super
that.
Super sniper squad. Yeah.
Yeah, that would just feel bad.
Yeah. Anyway, I've talked way too much already this episode.
Well, let's take a break and we'll come back with this. We're gonna wait to talk about Tyranids. I'm gonna try to get a crossover event. I'm gonna try to get Ace Face on from Twisted Dice to talk about Tyranids next week.
Are we gonna be talking about Warhammer Plus next?
Yes. We'll talk about Warhammer Plus right after the break.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, we are back. Thanks for listening to that word from our sponsor. I want to talk about Warhammer Plus. this is one of those things been out for a little bit. The platform is starting to mature, get, you know, weekly content added. I think they add them on every Wednesday. I'm digging it. Oh, I mean, man. There is a show in there about Blood Angels. So, I mean, I was sold automatically from the get.
There it is, folks.
I guess, let me just start with this. Adam, do you have the app yet?
No. Nah.
Okay, well, me neither.
Here's a great reason to grab this thing. Because, okay, so like Paul, you mentioned the little clips and shows, like those are pretty cool. I think they did a really good job with a lot of them, and the little bits that you can kind of drag into the 40K, like different areas of the 40K world. And I can really see as that develops. You remember like when Disney Plus came out and there was just the Mandalorian for the most part? I think it's kind of started off like that, but I can see it really fleshing itself out as they expand. Now, here's the crazy thing, which is awesome. Again, so I got a 9-year-old and 7-year-old who are putting together. I went and got the Get Started kits for painting. My 9-year-old's playing, he's got Space Marines, so it's 3 Assault Intercessors that he had, and then the 7-year-old got 3 Necrons, and they started painting them and everything. And then I was looking at this Warhammer Plus app, and there's actually like how to play videos. And don't get me wrong, like we played some games and I walked them through them, but what really helped was these actually really well done videos that they have of how to play 40K. And they have it for, honestly, like every Games Workshop box set game that there
Age
is.
Age of Sigmar, like Kill Team, yeah, Blood Bowl, exactly. Warcry.
And they're done really well. Yeah. They're done really, really well. And so to be able to like watch those with my boys and let them like introduce themselves to the game that way, and then for us to go through and play. Like I'm sitting there playing and, you know, they started the game. I mean, we played like a little 15 power level game against each other. I was like, okay, you're going to do this. And my 9-year-old's like, well, what about the command phase? It was like, well, yeah, they're because he it's just the crazy thing that blew me away was that he remembered the stuff from the video. And I hadn't talked to him about that. And so, again, I think that they did a really good job with that. And there's also hobby videos and how to paint videos. I think it's a great app for the price and the fact that it encapsulates the app as well. I think it's pretty awesome. I think it's great.
Nice. Good indictment. And the only reason I haven't, the only reason I haven't bought the app is that I'm barely playing the game at the moment. I've been in lockdown. So the city I'm living in, Melbourne, has had more days in lockdown than anywhere else on the earth.
I've seen
pandemic.
some funny memes about yeah. that. I mean, look, it sucks that activity is limited, but I mean, you know, safety first and all of that.
Exactly. But if it's safe, whatever.
With the subscription, you'd get the app. So if I had to be critical of it, is that some of the value is not all in the shows. It's not all
right.
in the content. It's you get the app, the Warhammer app. You get access to all the backlogs of White Dwarves and stuff if you wanted to go back and look at that kind of stuff. And then the weekly content they have, it's, you know, it's animation shorts, but it's also these painting tutorials, these masterclass painting tutorials, and then lore stuff. So, you know, it's kind of like podcasts. You know, when you're doing the hobby stuff, click it up next to you and you get to watch these 15, 20 minute things. Maybe while you're painting, oh, I have to paint the pouches on my unit. Let me queue up this show and go through it. And I do think it's going to continue to build over time. But at the same time, in our hobby to where, you know, a pot of paint is getting towards $5. What is it? $6 a month if you do it monthly?
Yeah.
And
you can do it for 12 months, but it only costs the price of 10 months.
Yeah. I've enjoyed it immensely, and for the content and for all the other things, the apps and then also as a little kind of, you know, a little bit of a treat for myself every week to check some of the new content out.
Do you just sit down, get your little pots of Mephiston Red, get Dante out of his, you know, dusty cubicle, sit him on the coffee table next to you and chuck on the Blood Angel show and be like, there you go, Dante.
That's what we do. We watch together. It's a little Dante and quality
touch. That should be a bad 80s. Someone should make a bad 80s sitcom intro called Dante and I, and it's just Paul and his Dante model going about his everyday life.
But I mean, I've said this on the show before, but those masterclass videos are worth the price of admission by themselves.
Yeah, I hear they're phenomenal. Who's the artist? She's incredible. I've
seen
some of the stuff.
Yeah, Louise Sugden. She is amazing.
Mind-boggling. Absolutely mind-boggling.
Yeah, does other stuff than painting, I think. Like I think she's helping bring together like the old world stuff. I mean, I don't know.
Kind of hinted at it. We've seen pictures of her making maps for it.
Yeah,
that's exciting.
Painting and then what she can do with colors, and also how she explains it is it's come about in a way that I have not seen in other tutorials. And while I don't know that I am personally capable of that level of painting, I will also learn that I don't have to do all the steps. I can do some of the steps and get some of the result, which is better than I had before.
Spot on. Yeah, I've seen some of the tutorials out there, some of the best ones that sound like they're of the ilk of what she's producing. And yeah, I don't have the fine motor skills to do some of that. But you're absolutely right. If I can get halfway there, it's still twice as good as I'm doing now, and adding a whole new bunch of skills and tools to my abilities. So
the
yeah,
way
it's exciting.
You approach a color that you might not have thought before is, you know, still helps you in your own painting.
I saw the picture. Someone sent me a screenshot of the face gradient she did of the different colors across the face painting tutorial. And I just bugged out being like, huh?
Yeah, it's out of control.
What?
I think actually Falcon's tweets regarding that particular tutorial are some comedic gold, by the way.
Yeah. Was he also just impressed with the...
Something about painting the rainbow or something. Yeah.
You're like, surely not. Surely that doesn't work. And then by the end, you're like, you crazy.
Yeah, it does.
I heard somebody made a meme of that with, is it Bob Ross? He used to do the fuzzy head, lovely gentleman.
Yes.
He did the, yeah. Bob Ross, you know, he's painting a cloud and he starts with yellow and people are like, there's no way, Bob, that's insane. And then he's got a beautifully painted cloud by the end of it. And you're like, you son of a,
there's no burnt umber in the sky,
in the cloud,
Mr. Ross.
You're off your rocker, old man. Get it together.
He finally lost it. 47 episodes on PBS and he's finally cracked. Nope, it's another cloud.
Pull the cheeky on you.
Folks have been critical of the animation style, but I mean, you can find things to be critical about anything. I mean, I guess really what for the content and the story, I've appreciated them. I think that the anthology series Hammer and Bolter walks a pretty fine line between we're old hats at this. We know the lore. We know who Ulrich the Slayer and that kind of stuff is already. We know who Yarrick is, but there's a lot of people out there who don't, who have not put in the time that we have. And so this is a way to kind of expose some of that stuff. But I feel like there's still enough in there to make me, oh, I didn't know that, come away with that. That's kind of neat. Or it's just entertaining. It's just a divergent way to spend 20 minutes.
Yeah, spot on.
So full disclosure, I've only seen old Baylai because I don't really have time to really watch anything. And when I paint, I'm like full attention. But I did watch old Baylai and I didn't see anything wrong with that animation. It kind of reminded me of like the old heavy metal movie little bit. Yeah, and I thought it looked great. I mean, maybe it's not up to like this like CGI standards of today's age, but there was something so like charming and nostalgic about that particular episode.
So I had peers of mine criticize the animation style, saying it feels more like an audiobook with pictures rather than an actual, you know, fully fledged cartoon. And I can see where that comes from, but I think it's a little bit of a disservice because I think the way they're doing it is a style. There is a style to that.
Yeah, it's a choice.
Because it's not overly animated. Like the amount of people talk about the amount of frames per, you know, motion, and they cut from, you know, piece to piece more than having a, you know, a bunch of frames going between each, you know, movement, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't think it's a problem. I don't think it's a big deal. Like,
do you think do you think it's only a problem now that we have fancy TVs? Because that's the animation style that I had when I was growing up, and
exactly,
it looks fine on
that's
my
exactly
TV.
Spot on. That's like, that's what I grew up on, that animation style. That's what you talk about Dragon Ball Z. Actually, do you know what's really interesting about Dragon Ball Z? You'd have like every third episode look so much better than the others. Like for some reason, like they're just different animators because they do. Yeah. And you go back and you watch it and you're like, why is that episode look so much better than this next one where Goku's mouth like moves twice in the whole show? And you're just like, huh? And it's pretty funny. It's just, I don't know, different animators just put different amounts of work in.
Well, with this though, I enjoy it. I think that there's going to be differences in animation style, either because of, you know, different artists or studios or stylistic choices that they make. but I'm enjoying the stories and following along with things and all the value that you get with the rest of the app and the fact that it really isn't that expensive.
Yeah, question.
As far as a monthly subscription service goes. Now, everyone, I'm not certainly not devaluing what you know anyone wants to do with their money. And once there is a point where when you have a bunch of subscription services, when is too much, you know, for your own personal choice. But for as someone who is a big fan of Warhammer, I do not regret having my subscription and the Warhammer Plus.
Yeah. Have you guys gotten your miniatures? Like, have you got the miniature already, or is that
coming
at the
later?
End?
I don't know when later is, but if you signed up, you did get a voucher, like a gift certificate to use on the website, and I did get that, and I did use that.
Nice.
I ordered a Big Mech with a custom Forceman.
Love it. I actually went and picked up my Black Templars box set yesterday, and I let myself look through it, but I'm not allowed to build or paint any of it yet. It's my treat for when I finish some of my Raven Wing units.
So then you go to paint more black and
yay.
Look, you're testing it. You're practicing getting your
Also, I had to make a big hard decision in my hobby life, because I had this beautiful Black Templars army that I loved, but then I found I was totally now in love with 30k Dark Angels, and I wanted that scheme to be my 40k Dark Angels piece, because I wrote a fluff piece to make it make sense. Like, the lion woke up, slapped him around and said, paint it black. We're not gonna, you know, pay homage to Caliban. They tried to kill us, you idiots. So they paint their armor black again, and they got some nice red stripes, so they remember and stuff. And yeah, it's beautiful. But I was just like, well, I still love Black Templars. How can I go back to that? And can I stomach, you know, like a hungover person being offered a drink? I'm not gonna maintain two black Space Marine armies. I'm just not gonna do it. So I made the hardest decision of saying, well, I think I'm just going to paint my Black Templars in my Horus Heresy color scheme, 30K Blood Angels, Dark Angels Heresy color scheme, because it's not that far from it. And if I paint all the crosses red from a distance and have the right white accents, it'll still look very Black Templar. And sometimes you're just going to make these hard decisions in your life when you're torn in half by two loves.
There you go. Right. Hey, we're going to transition a bit. Well, sort of talking, you know, hobby stuff. A couple of weeks ago, we promised a finish and move segment. We're talking about capes and like a down and dirty, quick and easy turquoise. But I'm going to yield the floor to Tanya.
Well, I guess this whole technique is wet blending. And I know some people use wet blending as like an advanced technique to get very like seamless transition between colors. But the way that I'm using it is actually just to like slap the paint on the models and get it done as quickly as possible. Cause this is my custodes and this is my renovation project. They've seen better days and I just don't want to spend that much time on them. So basically you can use this with any color. You just pick a darker shade and that's going to be your shadow, and then you would pick a lighter shade that's going to be your top highlight, and you don't really thin the paints too much, and this gives you a little bit more time to work with it in its wet state. As soon as you add water to it, it tends to dry a little bit faster. I know it doesn't really make sense, but that's just the way that it works.
Something about science, right? It's adding water to the acrylic, the medium, it starts to evaporate.
I don't know if you guys ever use this, but I have a little pot of retarder, so it'll stop the paint from drying. Sometimes I'll add a drop of that into, say, if I'm doing stuff in an airbrush, I'll add that in. Would that work on this as well, Tanya?
Probably. I've tried retarders before and it kind of changed the texture of the paint for me, and I'd already gotten used to doing it this way, but it's definitely something to consider, especially if you use, like, if you live in a drier area. But basically what I do for this is I just pretty thick, like not super thick, but you want it to sort of stay wet for a little bit. So I just basically slap the shadow color on, and then sometimes I don't even clean the brush. And then I take some of the highlight color and I put it on the very highlights, like the very top parts of the folds. And then, on a paper towel, I just wipe most of the paint off that's left over on the brush. And then I take that brush without cleaning it, because again, you don't really want to add too much water. And then I just start sort of smooshing the paint together. So I take from the shadowy part that's still wet, and then I pull it up into the highlighted part, And then if there's any paint on the brush at that point, I just wipe it off on a napkin or something like that. And then I draw from the highlight into the shadow. And I keep doing that until it's pretty well blended. And I do it really fast because it's a very stylized kind of look that I'm going for. And it looks really good from about, you know, 2 or 3 feet away.
I like your tech about not cleaning the brush. That's or not completely cleaning the brush, because you're probably using some of that paint that's in the brush also to help with the transition.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, basically, you just don't want to change the texture of the paint too much because that's what's going to help you sort of work the paint a little bit longer on the model. But yeah, I mean, the whole point is I want to blend the colors together, so I'm not too concerned about getting all of the paint off of the brush.
So I could see this being an extremely good technique for things like a Space Marine shoulder pad or a shin guard or whatever. How big could you go with this technique? Would it look any good on, you know, like the side of a tank or anything, or is that just asking too much?
I think it probably could. I've not really done it myself, but I think you just have to choose like a fairly large brush in order to do it. In fact, in general, when you're painting large surfaces like tanks, the bigger the brush, the less brush strokes you're going to have. So I actually like using a filbert brush for that. And I think you probably could use this technique for that as well. You probably would need a retarder though, because you are working on such a big surface.
Yeah. Yeah. It could start to get really caked on if you just miss your timing.
Yeah.
I find that you can get away with some of these kind of grittier techniques on smaller pieces, like a cape or a shoulder pad, like you were talking about, or a pouch or something like that.
Yeah. Like it's going to work best when there's no like really sharp edges on it. Like when it's very flowy and soft curves, like shoulder pads and whatnot. Tanks in general tend to be lots of like flat surfaces with right angles on them.
Yeah.
So that might cause a little bit of problems for this technique.
One last question. Well, for me at least, does it work better on like, if I was to put a varnish under it, or would it need a matte finish or something that'll just make it more workable? Cause I know when I'm mixing paints on a palette is usually pretty flat, pretty, you know, it's not a very matte area because otherwise the paint just gets caught in. You know, usually you do it on like a piece of plastic or, you know, a palette or whatever. Do you need like a non-porous surface? Should you put down like a lacquer or a varnish before you try something like this?
I've never done it. I've only ever done it on super matte primer.
Yeah, so G-Dub primer is like on a satin, in the satin side of things, but there are some really matte primers out there that I was actually worried about the paint just wouldn't flow into each other.
I use a super matte primer, and I've never had a problem with it. Yeah.
Cool. Good to know.
We talking about sealers and stuff. Sometimes the top coat of sealer, whether it be a satin, it'll sometimes help even out those brush strokes even after the paint is dried.
I agree, actually. And my favorite varnish, I actually just call it like the magic top coat, because if you have any small brush strokes on there, it just makes them disappear.
That's
it's amazing.
Awesome.
Yeah.
But you got to be careful with that.
Got to be careful with it.
Well, yeah. Well, I'm just varnishes in general. It's there are ways you can cloud your model up. You can fix it, but then you're starting a different process. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. In general, like I find that varnish and top coats tend to react with moisture in the air. If you can do it on a drier day, that's usually when you're going to get the best results.
Spot on. Yeah, I find varnish to be its own whole world that I find kind of intimidating. Because I'm like, as soon as I put the varnish on, there's really no going back. Like, there's no undoing anything. I'm painting over it. Everything I put on top of that varnish is going to look different to the paint under that varnish, so to speak. Does that make sense? Like, if I was to try and neaten up black that I've already varnished with
satin, that is true.
Like that black looks different to that black, and I'm never going to be
happy. You're happy with the core of the model. Whatever
I'm always going to know. Yeah. That's the thing, yeah? No one else is going to notice, but I will. I'll be like, that's different.
Yeah. There's a couple of spots, the same thing. Like I've had to touch up like a Fire Raptor, and where I've had to go and touch up some of the places, you know, where the paint is rubbed off, like the very top creases or the corners of the flanges or whatever. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't look the same.
But at the same time, you can use that to your advantage if you're trying to create like texture on the model. So like in general, if you're using blood for the blood god, you want to put that on after the varnish so that it keeps its really kind of like sticky, bloody kind of look.
Yeah, it's properties. Not fair. Yeah. Good points.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Tanya, thanks for the tip. Red had to jump, but Adam, thanks for joining us as well.
Absolute pleasure as always.
We'll be back next week talking about the Tyranids from Octarius campaign with hopefully a special guest who has been a Tyranid, been holding it down with Tyranids this entire time.
I'm excited for that. I think Ace Face is just awesome. Yeah.
We'll see y'all next week.
See you then.
What they said, but I already subscribed. You better do it too.